Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The state primary day is coming up next Tuesday, and one of the most watched races will be the primary race for the Republican nomination in the 1st District, as incumbent Congressman Jim Bridenstine seeks what he says is his final term. But Tulsa oil man Tom Atkinson has challenged the incumbent in a surprisingly competitive race. We've extended invitations to both to hear from them. Congressman Bridenstine's representatives have declined our invitation, and so today my guest is his challenger, Tom Atkinson. Atkinson is the founder and president of Oki Crude Company, an energy firm here in Tulsa. He's a lifelong Tulsan. He's also a former Air Force officer, a federal prosecutor at the Department of Justice, and later a bankruptcy judge in the Northern District of Oklahoma. This is his first attempt at elected office. Tom Atkinson, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Rich. Glad to be here.
So the question, especially given the ads we've seen for your candidacy on television, is what made you decide to run? It looks like your views in many ways are very similar to the incumbent, and you also have an incumbent congressman from your party that is running. So what made you decide to run?
Rich, there are more things that we probably have in common than we would disagree on. That's true. We're the same party, and this is a Republican primary. I'm in the oil and gas business, and I've been in it for 30 years. And I'm very upset at the loss of jobs in that industry and other industries throughout the Southwest and Oklahoma, and in particular the 1st District. I've got a long history of creating jobs, and I've felt always that our government representatives ought to have some grounding in business, ought to understand how to make a payroll, how to handle a budget. And without that real life experience, I think we're lacking something in Congress. So I certainly think I could add to the equation. I'd be the only fellow up there who's actually run an oil and gas company besides Bill Flores from the state of Texas. So I think that's a big deal if you've got no one up there that understands an industry that's suffering. We're missing something here in Oklahoma.
Now, let me ask you right off the bat, there was a vote at the end of 2015. It was a big omnibus bill that sort of helped fund government. And as a part of that bill, it would have allowed, and it did allow because it did pass, energy producers here in the United States to send crude oil abroad to export oil. How big did that play in your decision? Because your opponent, the incumbent congressman, voted against that omnibus bill.
Well, that was a big deal. There was, of course, you had every other member of the delegation voting for it. And then you had Congressman Bridenstine vote against it. I was not in Congress at the time. And it was a vote that was very contentious. A lot of consideration was given to what is the impact to our national debt if we continue to spend at this rate. But I think you have to take the good out of that bill and examine it very carefully. If you'll study what it did for the military and the military installations, that's very important. Here in Oklahoma, we have Tinker Air Force Base. And that bill was necessary to preserve the funding for the 7 AWACS that are based at Tinker. So the bill was an important vote. It was applauded by Congressman Cole, all the other members of the delegation. It was a smart vote for national security. Also, there were medical funding provisions in that bill that when they were established as a priority, Congress was applauded for doing something positive. You know, if you go in and you oppose something just because ideologically part of it is contrary to your beliefs, you miss the good. And as a practical guy who has run a company, I'm always the optimist. I'm looking for what is good in everything. And I think on the whole, even Congressman Bridenstine has agreed, there were some good things in that bill. There was funding for the National Institute of Health for Alzheimer's research, funding for the NIH for Ebola research. There was many good things in the bill that on the whole outweighed the bad. My philosophy is, if you get to that situation where you've got to make a decision, should you do it on the basis of ideology, your own personal scorecard with your Twitter feed or your individual polling results, or should you look for what's good to the nation and what's good to Oklahoma? it takes a certain amount of maturity to make those courageous votes. But I notice other incumbents are being attacked for their vote yes for that bill. That tells you the easy targets are the easy arguments. But you have to remember, if you go after something and you want to tear down something that's been institutionalized in this country, which is good government, you've got to be prepared as a leader to step up and replace it with something positive. And what I bring to the table is not only platitudes about what's good for Oklahoma and what's good for the nation, but a life of experience of finding solutions and working with people. If you work with people in a positive way, if you develop that interconnectivity, I submit to you, 9 times out of 10, you're going to be able to find some common ground. And it's going back to what I said before. There's more that we have in common that separates us on most of these votes. If you're going to draw a battle line over a single vote and villainize everyone who voted one particular way and then try to put a label on them, you've got to be prepared to step up and say what you would do to replace it, what you would do as a leader rather than just vote no. If everything has got to be 100% ideologically perfect, that's when perfect becomes the enemy of good.
Let me ask you, it sounds like what you're saying is, your campaign page says that you're very conservative. You're 100% pro-life. You're for securing the borders. You're against Obamacare. A lot of typical conservative principles. But it sounds like you're willing to compromise if you can get at least some good out of a bill. And this has been a criticism of Congress within the last decade or so, that they really hasn't been able to compromise. Are you saying you're able to compromise?
Well, on the hope that I could walk into a room and find people that are willing to listen, like your listeners here, they're willing to open up their ears and turn off their cell phone, get away from their life for a moment. I've heard so many stories of people have said, well, I've kept my car running in the driveway to finish listening to what Rich is talking about, or to finish a piece from NPR. For those folks who are willing to listen, they certainly should be willing to compromise. My view of compromising is when I walk into a room of any mixture of ideologies or parties, there are going to be folks who, like myself, they have a love of their nation. They have a life's experience of dealing with other individuals and working out problems. So just taking that as a premise is that that may not be your perfect mixture of the room, but I think if I walk in, I still don't expect, even if I'm listened to, I don't expect to get 100% on any subject. But if I can get 80% of people to agree with me, I'll get up the next morning and go back to work on the other 20%. And hopefully the folks will bend my way. But I'm willing to listen to the other point of view as well. If I insulate myself and just decide that it's my way or the highway, and I don't have any solution to add to anything in government after I've torn something down, if I don't have this solution and I'm not prepared to offer a solution, what business is it of mine to act as an obstructionist and to hold democracy hostage? I'm flabbergasted with members of Congress who can't wait to run to a microphone and announce some soundbite that says, basically, I have stopped the process and I am mad and I'm angry. Now, I would suspect some people are going to vote for me who are mad and angry about the system. They're going to come from all walks of life. But I think I can relate to all walks of life because I've walked all the walks. I've started an oil company, and in that oil company, I've had to compromise. I've had to compromise on pricing. I've had to compromise on my budgets. I've had to pull my horns in lean times, and I've had to resist the temptation to be overly exuberant in the good times. I've had to exercise sound business judgment. I've watched others who have been successful in this community. Take, for instance, the Helmrich family, how careful they've been in managing their wonderful company and building character. You know, in that company, tone has been set at the top. And I think it's a real tribute to the business judgment of those leaders. Why can't we have a Congress that's populated with, like, the board of directors of Helmrich & Payne Corporation? Why can't we have a Congress that's populated with the hard workers on the Helmrich & Payne rigs, for example? And I don't want to just carve out that one company. You've got other business leaders here, bankers, leaders of energy companies. You've got businessmen, small businessmen. Why can't we have those type of individuals in Congress? That was a motivating factor in getting me out of my chair from my company, Oakey Crude Company, which is a small energy company. I'm willing to step aside from that company and show that I've got the courage to go to Washington and do something about these things I've been thinking about for years. I'm not a politician, but to me, this is just common sense. If you've got a problem, you've got to gather the right folks to fix it.
You mentioned a little bit about your biography. You're president and founder of an energy company. For those that don't know more about you, tell us a little bit about yourself. What have you? You've been a former federal prosecutor.
Yes. I was started out a lifelong Tulsan. I started kindergarten at Eisenhower. I was here for all through high school. I earned a business degree in finance at Southern Methodist University in Dallas. I was privileged to be part of a reserve officer training corps on the campus of my college. And on the day I received my diploma, I also received a commission as an officer in the United States Air Force, which I've been very proud of my entire life. The Air Force allowed me to pursue a law degree, which I did at Oklahoma City University. I immediately entered active duty. I was privileged to work for a two-star general in Washington, D.C., Harold Vaig, in an office that handled, we had 941 pilots who had been shot down in Vietnam. They were released in February of 1973. Part of our work was to work with those shattered lives in 1974 as they tried to piece their lives back together. That was a real maturing process for a young officer. I was also privileged to be hired by the Tax Division Criminal Section of the United States Department of Justice in Washington, D.C. And I handled white-collar criminal tax fraud cases, money laundering, counterfeiting, and worldwide scams that are still going on today. I've got some friends that still work in the department, and they've dedicated their lives to protecting our country's national security, which right now is threatened by international money laundering. We've got terrorists hijacking oil in the Middle East, and within seconds that money can be around the world to finance terrorist activity. So I know a little bit about how those guys think and how they work. I went from the Department of Justice to my hometown, Tulsa, Oklahoma, and it was a typical life. I met my wife, Joni Atkinson. We've got two daughters. We've got two granddaughters. And in the last three decades, I had built an oil company, Oakey Crude Company, which started with a couple of $1,000 in my pocket. And I feel very fortunate to have created hundreds of jobs across the Southwest to operate wells from the northern border of Montana to South Texas. It's still, I'd call it a pretty lean operation, you might expect at this time with prices down. We've tightened our belt, and we'll make it just fine because of those sound business judgments we made in the period when things got a little exuberant. We didn't get overextended. We didn't take on any debt, and had learned the lessons of that some others had ignored.
My guest today is Tom Atkinson. He is the running for the Republican nomination for the 1st Congressional District in Oklahoma, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. We've also offered, made a number of invitations to the incumbent congressman, Congressman Bridenstine, but he has declined to come on the program. So your biggest priority, if you're elected, what would you say the biggest priority, the thing you want to tackle from day one if you're the nominee and become the next congressman?
Well, as a small business guy. I'm interested in the fiscal issues. And I think I'd be most qualified to tackle those fiscal issues. And, you know, in Congress, Rich, there's one other gentleman from Texas who has run an oil and gas company, Bill Flores. To the best of my knowledge, I'd be the second member of Congress out of 435 congressmen who's actually run an oil and gas company. And I didn't inherit my company. I started it from scratch. So I can look at a bill that has anything to do with energy, and I can explain to somebody from Chicago or New York what an MCF is, what a barrel of oil is, and how that stuff is priced, and what the lifting costs are to get it out of the ground. I can explain the economics and what burdens would be placed on the industry by overregulation. I've worked in government. I've seen how the tone is set at the top. When I worked in the United States Department of Justice, it was in the Gerald Ford administration. And that is, I've got to point out, I was a very young man. I want to make that very clear. I was probably the youngest lawyer in the criminal section. I absolutely was. And within a very short period of time, I understood how the tone was established in the Department of Justice. It was extremely respectful to all of its employees. All of the lawyers were given huge responsibility based on the huge job that we had. We handled all criminal tax prosecutions across all 50 states. They were not handled locally. Just at one office, 31 lawyers. And the tone was very, very important because that's a very powerful tool. So I realized that that power should be wielded with maturity and discretion and what they call prosecutorial discretion. I think some heads of government agencies today are more of a cowboy nature, maybe a cowboy from Chicago. But I don't like the tone. I don't like the tone of the EPA. I don't like the tone of some of the agencies that regulate the banks under Dodd-Frank. I think it's more of a agenda-driven, political agenda-type tone. Now, how am I, a guy from Tulsa, Oklahoma, able to sit in judgment over these government officials? Well, I, in my humble opinion, based as a businessman and talking to other business persons, I can tell you that we are being harassed by some agencies in the federal government. And I'm not doing this as some sort of a victim. We're big boys, and we know how to defend ourselves. In the 80s, my company was a plaintiff against the Bureau of Indian Affairs in a oil pricing suit in Osage County. And as soon as I filed that action, I was joined by other co-plaintiffs, and you name it. It's the eclectic list of all the major oil companies. And in the reported decisions, it's Oki Crude Company and then you read them off. All the big public companies joined me, and we won. And throughout my career, I've been willing to stand up to any unfairness on behalf of what I felt was to my company or to my industry. And I think the banking industry needs to stand up to the regulators who are trying to advance an agenda that makes actually banks and the members of the board scared of making a move. We need to support our capitalism. We need to support our expanding economy by a gentle touch from the regulatory bodies. Regulation is good when it's close to home, when it's close to the ground. I have no problem with it.
You mentioned the Dodd-Frank bill, and certainly it was passed in the wake of the financial collapse, which was caused by, even though people didn't go to jail, there was a lot of fraudulent activity within banking. You had companies that were betting against their own mortgage-based securities, knowing that they were going to fail. They were hedging against it. At the same time, they were selling it. That's what regulation's for. So how is Dodd-Frank hurting the banking industry, given what the banking industry has done to the American economy over the last 15 years?
Rich, that's a great observation. I agree with you 100% that the collateralization of mortgages was a terrible result of a industry that was run by, we've mentioned cowboys, those were cowboys, and it had worldwide global ramifications. You know, student debt is actually collateralized and sold in the same fashion. This crushing student debt is a big issue, a very big issue. I noticed my opponent had received a huge PAC donation from a private company that gives college loans, at the same time while he rails against the government funding of student loans. But the point is, when you have a government, you have, at its essence, you have people. And you have various people who are charged with their geographic or responsibility, their territorial responsibility. I'm objecting to regulators who get out of the bounds of that responsibility, who get out of their lane and expand that authority and that power wantonly, which slips away from being regulatory and doing what Congress intended, and slips over into the territory being just plain dangerous. I know good companies that have been ruined by regulators who have pursued a personal agenda to destroy a particular industry. You're seeing that happen in the coal industry, seeing it happen in the oil and gas industry. And as far as I'm concerned, I think, again, it's about tone and tenor. All the way through government, the tone and tenor of the regulatory bodies and the tone and tenor of the political parties and the members of Congress. You have so much division when there could be such an opportunity to find so many more things in common than the things that separate us. That's really where my comment was directed.
My guest today is Tom Atkinson. He is running for the Republican nomination for the Oklahoma 1st Congressional District. He's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Let me ask you, earlier you were talking about, you know, when somebody says, I'm going to tear an institution down or I'm going to vote against something to get rid of something, they need to step up and offer an alternative. One of the things you have mentioned is you're against the Affordable Care Act. You'd like to see it replaced. What would you like to see it replaced with?
Well, it's not news to anyone how many votes there have been to repeal it. That seems to be the soundbite. You've got some constructive bills that have been offered out there to chip away at it in the meantime.
I should mention, though, at the same time, we have far more people covered by insurance than we did prior to its passage.
Yeah, but you've also got the classic six broken promises of the Affordable Care Act. Remember the one where you can keep your doctor? Remember the one where you can keep your health plan? And actually, a constructive member of Congress authored a bill. It was called Keep Your Health Plan Act. And Congressman Bridenstine voted no. Why do you vote no? Ideologically, there was something wrong with it. That was that same problem. You've got an opportunity here to chip away at something that wasn't allowing people to keep their health plan because the health plans were disqualified under the Obamacare, Affordable Care Act. And yet, here's this bill that could chip away at that problem and allow folks to keep their health plan. And my opponent votes no. That's a situation where I would walk in the room and say, look, that's not all of what I want. I'm obviously not getting it repealed, but I can chip away at it and do something positive. That's the kind of congressman that Tom Atkinson would be.
Well, let me ask you, what would you do if you have a Republican president and you have a Republican Congress and you're able to repeal the Affordable Care Act? What would your alternative look like that would allow you to at least insure the number of people we are insuring now, and you have a different vehicle? What would your vehicle look like?
My vehicle would start on the premise that we don't need a government-mandated health care. I would ask that other members of Congress co-sponsor with me a bill to create a commission of health care professionals who would have to pass on any legislation before it was introduced in the House. You see, if you go talk to health care professionals, they're the greatest critics of all. They'll tell you what's wrong with it. They'll tell you that their repayments under Medicare are being reduced, that economically it's impacting their practice. Some of them are going to these VIP practices, are getting out of just taking anybody through the door. Others are getting into situations that are completely different than your standard country doctor or physician who would visit you at home. That's absolutely not going to happen. These doctors are seeing 35, 40 people a day, and they're overworked, and their reimbursements under Medicare are being reduced under this plan. This plan, as it exists today, actually is a tax on everybody. That's another one of those broken promises. Remember that one? If you make over $250,000 a year, this won't cost you anything in the way of a tax. Well, yes, it does. I've got a subcontractor that works for my company. He told me, he said, look, my wife and I are in good shape. We've got everything paid off, and we think we've got health care that's pretty good for us. We pay about $950 a month for the two of us. And yet we get a bill from the government for $2,100 because we didn't buy the right kind of health care. I'd say let's start working on the problem with having a commission of physicians and health care providers and not some Soviet-style government-mandated health care that's covering everybody and not doing it very well. Government can't do some things very well.
My guest today, Tom Atkinson, he was running for the Republican nomination for the 1st Congressional District here in Oklahoma. I have to ask this very quick question. If you're nominated, will you support the presidential candidate of your party? As you well know, there's debates within the Republican establishment whether to support the presumptive nominee, Donald Trump, if he is indeed nominated. Would you support him?
Well, I'd like any listeners out there who are Donald Trump supporters to vote for me on June 28th. Because I think they're making a wise vote. Think about it. You're going to have a member of Congress who has the ability and the experience that Trump pounds his chest about. What does he claim to be that's unique? He's not a politician. What does he also claim? He's a businessman who's been successful. What else does he claim? He's not beholden to anyone. He doesn't owe any lobbyists anything, doesn't owe any PACs anything. I have no PACs supporting me. I don't have John Boehner or Speaker Ryan. I've filed my Federal Election Commission report, and if you examine it closely, everybody that supports me, they may not be aligned philosophically with Donald Trump, but the trajectory of their business careers has been somewhat similar. They're all successful, and their hard work, their devotion to the values that Americans hold close, and I'm talking about all Americans, not just Trump supporters, but what values are enshrined in our Constitution. Those are the voters that would probably appeal to find me appealing as well as Donald Trump appealing. If he is the Republican nominee, I'm hopeful that the Republican nominee is elected to the White House, because that to me is going to advance the cause of free enterprise, and hopefully we'll see whoever's the presidential nominee, we want, in either party, we want a movement to the center. Historically, that's been healthy for our nation, and that's going to be the best thing for the voters ultimately.
Last question. June 28th is primary day. Why should voters choose you?
Well, I'm going to preserve and protect their values. Their values that they talk to their kids about around the dinner table. I'm going to project leadership from the day I arrive at Congress with my experience. I hope to get a gavel, hope to have a responsible position, and actually be an effective leader for the Oklahoma voters here in the 1st District who've been missing effective representation. I'm not going to be an ideologue. I'm going to find solutions. I'm going to fix problems. I'm going to freeze congressional pay. I'm going to reject a congressional pension, and I'm going to reduce spending across every department by 4%, and I'm going to offer an amendment to balance the budget.
All right. Tom Atkinson, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich. It's my pleasure.
Tom Atkinson is the challenger for the Republican nomination in Oklahoma's 1st Congressional District. We also offered an invitation to incumbent Congressman Jim Bridenstine, who declined our invitation. Election Day is coming up on June 28th. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.